This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community in and around Sandwell. This edition due with postal listeners, we hope, by the 16th of May, Saturday, and a day or two earlier for those who use the internet or indeed listen to our podcast.
This week, sunrise will be at 5:05. Sunset at 9 p.m. By Tuesday, temperatures will reach 14 degrees, but it could be rather breezy.
Well, that's what my weather app tells me about next week's weather, and it was certainly more than breezy yesterday. Some very gusty winds as I went out to do a bit of shopping. So, as we usually start with some SVI activities for the forthcoming week, here's Artificial Alice again to tell you about them.
Hello, SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here is the list of activities taking place next week. Tuesday, 19th May. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing. Please note that there will be no line dancing for the next 2 weeks. Wednesday, May 20th. Men's Group, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10:30 to 12 noon. Join us this month at the Town Hall. No pressure or formalities, just a relaxed chat with good people. Feel free to come along and bring a friend, tea and biscuits included. Aquafit, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone. With expert instructor Alison, contact SVI if you are interested. Thursday, 21st May, West Midlands Police Museum. Lock up, Steelhouse Lane, Birmingham. 9:45 pick-up. Step inside Birmingham's historic Victorian lock-up and experience life on both sides of the bars. Join us for a guided tour, followed by tea and biscuits. Built in 1891 and used as a working police cell block until 2016, this unique museum brings two centuries of policing to life. We will travel on the metro, meeting at West Bromwich bus station at 9:45 a.m. The cost, including travel, is £10 per person. Don't forget your travel pass. Personal travel costs are not included. Showdown at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10:30 to 12:30. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players, but the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition, and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about? It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team. Sandwell Visually Impaired. West Bromwich Town Hall telephone. 012 1525 4810. Website. sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Some pieces from the week's readings from The Express and Star. Wednesday, May the 6th. Major disruption on Birmingham Lichfield line at end of May. Shoplifter jailed. Our region's tops of names. Hegabo top goal award. Thursday, man strangles sex worker. Does the new two-stop tram extension save time? Review of Saturday Night Fever at the Grand. Please continue clamp down on shoplifting. Drug dealer waits to see how much he must pay. Friday. Archer's theatre show on tour. I feel scared around men. Sex worker murder trial. Water company's fear of drought. Saturday. College's pride at getting King's Award. Political revolution in Sandwell. women's anxiety keeping the house clean. Monday, sculpture of Tipton Zeppelin World War I raid. Green victories at council elections. Households stashing cash and supplies. Six arrested after disorder in Great Bar. Family support reaches its 10-year milestone. Tuesday, 7-7 at the Double for Baggies. Under 18s new direct Walsall to London train service. Innocent men held in murder probe. Garden of Evolution in BBC Gardener's World.
And those are some or most of the stories coming up from this week's papers. And along the way, we'll have a catch-up with the latest relaxation and mindfulness walk that some people did last Thursday at the Chance Glassworks Museum, I think it is, in West Methick Park. And also, I hope to squeeze in a brief mention of Utilita, which seems a much nicer way of dealing with your gas and electricity supply, as they have premises on the high street in West Bromwich. They're not just online, like most of the other suppliers are. And there'll be the usual Talking News Federation rundown of upcoming audio described TV and also radio listings and one or two other items from them as well. So quite a lot to pack into this edition. So let's start with the news from a week ago last Wednesday, courtesy of Express and Star newspapers.
Hi everyone, it's Mia. I'm just going to be reading some newspaper articles from Wednesday, the 6th of May, in the Express and Star. I hope you've all been well and enjoying the lovely weather that we had just recently. I hope you all managed to get out and enjoy your bank holiday weekend as well. I hope everyone just had a lovely week. Let's begin. King's Award for College and Pioneering Packaging Firm. Businesses receive prestigious royal recognition for their excellence and growth. Sandwell College and pioneering packaging company Walcall are among businesses and organisations across the West Midlands recognised for their excellence and growth with the prestigious King's Award for Enterprise. Sandwell College, which has campuses across the borough, has been recognised for its innovative and unique employer partnerships that aim to give disadvantaged young people the chance to succeed in work. Staffordshire-based Walcall, meanwhile, is a successful, female-led, family-run firm that provides wool-based packaging solutions for businesses and has been awarded its third King's Award for Enterprise. This one in the international trade category in recognition of its growth and success of the global stage. Lord Lieutenant of the West Midlands, Derek Anderson, CBE, said, "The King's Award for Enterprise stands as one of the most respected and globally recognised marks of excellence." Congratulating the winners, he added, "The assessment process they have experienced is rigorous and exciting, and it is this thoroughness that gives the King's Award for Enterprise its international prestige, helping recipients to open doors to new markets, partnerships and opportunities in the UK and across the world. Nationally, there are 185 recipients, with 75 honoured in international trade category, 52 in innovation, 36 in substantial development, and 22 for promoting opportunity. Sandwell College has received the honour for promoting opportunity through social mobility in recognition of its groundbreaking collaboration with Hydropower Dynamics, a global leader in hose and tube manufacturing solutions, and their jointly developed Go Further programme, which has been transforming opportunities for young people and strengthening the region's engineering talent pipeline. The partnership with Birmingham-based Hydropower Dynamics Limited has created a programme of substantial industrial placements for T-level and level 3 vocational studies, with access to facilities, machinery, and live projects, and this has given learners unparalleled exposure to modern engineering environments. Speaking at the West Bromwich campus, Lisa Kapper, MBE, CEO and principal, said, "We are deeply honoured and immensely proud to receive the King's Award for Enterprise. This award reflects the strength of our commitment to enabling young people to succeed and progress, no matter what their background or starting point. Our Go Further project with Hydropower Dynamics has shown the power of partnership in getting young people into good jobs in industry through our shared passion for transforming opportunity for all young people from Sandwell and across the region. Together, we are creating innovative pathways into industry, raising aspirations, and growing the pipeline of vital skills for the future. We are privileged to celebrate this award alongside the achievement of our learners and colleagues, and our partner, Hydropower Dynamics. Hydropower Dynamics, based in Ladywood, Birmingham, a manufacturer of fluid handling systems incorporating hoses, manipulated tubes, and fabricated assemblies, also receives its own King's Award for promoting opportunity through social mobility. Patrick Brown, Managing Director, described the award win as a proud moment for everyone at Hydropower Dynamics, and he added, "Our partnership with Sandwell College has been particularly important, creating real opportunities for students to gain high-quality training and move into meaningful employment. This award reinforces the value of that collaboration and our ongoing commitment to developing the next generation of talent." Also honoured with the King's Award for Enterprise was Wallcall, an innovative and globally expanding business that provides wool-based substantial packaging solutions. The company, based in Stone, has already won two King's Awards for innovation in 2018 and sustainable development in 2022. And now it has been awarded a third in the international trade category in recognition of its international expansion. Chief Executive Josie Morris, who runs the business with her sister Jessica, who is Chief Financial Officer, said, "We're expanding globally, so it's really exciting for the team. It gives us something to celebrate. We're really happy about it." The company, which employs around 95 people, was started by Josie and Jessica's mother, Angela, a packaging consultant who came up with the original design concept of harnessing the insulating power of wool as a substantial temperature-controlled packaging solution in 2001. Angela, who is chairwoman of Wallcall, said this latest royal recognition was thanks to the dedicated Wallcall team. She added, "We are incredibly proud to receive this award. It is a recognition that underscores our long-held belief in the power of nature's own smart fibre." The King's Awards for Enterprise was first awarded in 1966 as the Queen's Award for Industry, when there were awards in just two categories, Export Achievement and Technological Innovation. Since then, around 8,000 organisations have received the award. The accolades were renamed 3 years ago to reflect His Majesty the King's desire to continue the legacy of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II by recognising outstanding UK businesses. His Majesty's Lord Lieutenants, the King's representatives, will present the awards to businesses locally at a later date. Passengers warned of major rail disruption during works. No trains will run between Birmingham and Lichfield during a three-day period. Rail passengers in the West Midlands are being urged to plan ahead later this month as a key railway line faces a three-day closure to allow major high-speed rail works to take place. Services on the Cross City line between Birmingham New Street and Lichfield Trent Valley will be suspended from May 29th to the 31st, as engineers install a new viaduct linked to the High Speed 2 HS2 scheme. Normal services are expected to resume on June the 1st. The closure will affect the northern section of the route, meaning no trains will run between Birmingham and Lichfield during the three-day period. Services on the southern section between Birmingham New Street and Redditch or Bromsgrove will continue to operate as normal. Rail bosses say the disruption is necessary to safely install a 150-metre viaduct near the future Curzon Street station. The structure will eventually carry HS2 trains over the existing Victorian Railway between Duddeston and Birmingham New Street. Passengers travelling during the closure are being advised to check their journeys in advance. Replacement bus services will operate between Birmingham New Street and Lichfield Trent Valley, as well as between Birmingham New Street and Tamebridge Parkway. Additional disruption is expected on routes between Birmingham and Tamebridge Parkway, while services to Rugeley Trent Valley will be diverted and may take longer than usual. Patrick Cawley, Network Rail and HS2 Director for On Network Works, said, "We're asking passengers to plan ahead of a 3-day closure on the cross-city line between Birmingham and Lichfield, which is needed to safely install a new HS2 viaduct deck over the existing railway." Shoplifter who stole from the same shop 8 times, jailed. Prolific thief took more than £200 worth of goods over a matter of weeks in Spree. A prolific shoplifter stole from the same store 8 times in 3 weeks, fleeing with more than £200 worth of goods in a crime spree. Donald Hornby, of no fixed address, began his theft crime spree on April 6th, heading into a shop in Throne Road, Rowley Regis, just after 7 a.m, and snatching around £92 worth of items from the shelves before leaving without paying. Hornby, 34, headed back to the same store around 12:15 p.m. and placed £122 worth of goods inside his bag and walked out without payment. He returned twice on April 9th at 1 p.m. and 3:55 p.m, again taking items off the shelves and refusing to pay. And again on April 18th and 20th, targeting it a further 4 times over the 2 days. By now, officers were on the lookout for the thief, whose spree was halted when an off-duty officer spotted him at a food store at Albury Green Retail Park off Albury Ringway on April 24th, where he was again seen to be placing items into a bag and attempting to flee. A struggle ensued when Hornby attempted to choke the officer who was attempting to stop him from leaving. Detaining him, other officers arrived on the scene to help and take Hornby into custody. He subsequently pleaded guilty to 9 counts of theft, assaulting a police officer, and failing to comply with the notification requirements at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court on April 27th. The bench jailed him for 10 months and 6 months. Sergeant Jason Walters of South Sandwell Retail Crime Team said, "Hornby showed a complete disregard for the law and targeted the same store countless times, and even when confronted, still attempted to get away with his crimes. I want to encourage stores to continue reporting incidents like this to us. Without your help, we can't target those responsible and prosecute them." Alice Smith and Jones on the list of Region's top surnames. Study of most prevalent family names reveals West Midlands' cultural diversity. These are the most prevalent surnames in the metropolitan West Midlands, according to experts at Forebears. The West Midlands is the most ethnically diverse region of the UK outside London. According to the 2021 census, around 45% of people living in the metropolitan West Midlands did not identify as being from a white British background. The region's unique cultural mix and its industrial heritage that helped shape modern Britain can be seen in the names that make up the population. All information relating to surnames is courtesy of data from Forebears. The 14 most common surnames in the West Midlands. Smith is number 1. The most common surname in England is also the most prevalent in the West Midlands, with 1 Smith in every 83 people locally. It derives from the occupation of smithing, or working with metal, fitting given the region's industrial heritage. Number 2. Jones. The West Midlands again follows the English trend Jones, or son of John, Johan, Joan, is the most second common family name in both, with almost 29,000 people named Jones in our region. Number 3. Core. 2/5 of the cores in England, 42%, live in the West Midlands, where it is the third most common surname, despite being the 93rd most common in the country. It is adopted by baptised female Sikhs. Number 4. Singh. Singh is the 54th most common surname in England, but is 4th locally, where there are around 23,200 people with the surname. Like its female counterpart Kaur, Singh is a religious surname adopted by Sikhs partly to reduce caste-based prejudice. Number 5. Williams. Like Jones, Williams is derived from the father's name, son of William. It is the 5th most common name in the West Midlands and England. Number 6. Begum. A female name originating from Turkic languages. 21% of the Begums in England live in the West Midlands, according to Forebears. Number 7. Taylor. Another traditional English surname, likely derived from an occupation, it is the 3rd most common in England. There are around 15,600 tailors in the West Midlands. Number 8. Hussein. This Arabic name is the diminutive of Hassan, meaning good, handsome, or beautiful. Around 1 in every 200 people in the West Midlands is a Hussein. Number 9. Evans. Evans of Welsh origin is slightly more common in the West Midlands than in England, where it is the 13th most prevalent surname. Number 10. Khan. The surname Khan of Turkic and Mongolian origin is derived from the historic title meaning military chief or royalty. It is the 17th most common surname in the world, 40th most common in England, and 10th most common in the West Midlands. Number 11. Patel. There are around 12,000 people in the West Midlands with the name Patel, an Indian surname that originated in the state of Gujarat. In England as a whole, it is the 9th most common. Number 12. Brown. Another English mainstay derived from the name of an ancestor, son of Brun. Brown is the 4th most prevalent in England and the 12th most common in the West Midlands. Number 13. Davies. Also originating in Wales, this surname is more common in other parts of England than in the West Midlands, where a little under 7% of the country's Davises reside. Number 14. Harris. Meaning son of Harry or Henry, this name became widespread after the name Henry was introduced to Britain by the Normans. In England as a whole, where it is the 23rd most common surname. Hedjibow earned Gold Award despite running on empty. There was one piece of silverware on the line at Hillsborough on Saturday. Albion frontman Orn Hedjibow was presented with the club's Top Goalscorer Award. The Norway international received his award after the 2-1 defeat at Hillsborough to sign off the campaign for James Morrison's men, and it has certainly been a season of rollercoaster emotions for Hedjibow. There was no shortage of intrigue around the striker when he checked in from hometown club Bran in a deal worth £4.7 million last summer. Nicknamed the Hulk at his former club, he came with a promise of battling qualities, and he has certainly delivered those in the Black Country. His goal record in Norway's Tippeligaen top flight suggested a capability in front of goal, albeit taking into account the probable differences in standard in the two nations. Hedjibow's form in front of goal for the Baggies has been mixed at best, and his crown of top goalscorer comes with a reasonably underwhelming tally of 10 in all competitions, mostly from an incredible pre-Christmas hot streak of 7 goals in 7 games. That stint went against the grain for Hedjibo's campaign overall. The striker netted once in Morrison's 12 games. He finished one clear of midfielders Isaac Price, who found form later on, and was encouraged by Morrison to push for double figures. Hedjibo's record is in keeping with what has gone before him at recent years at the Hawthorns. Not since Dwight Gale and J. Rodriguez's superb 2018-2019 double act of 46 goals combined, which took them to the playoffs, but ultimately failed to deliver promotion, as an Albion player managed 20 goals. Carlin Grant, who could depart the club this summer as his contract expires, scored 18 in a poor 2021-2022 campaign. Brazilian star Matheus Pereira managed a creditable 12 in the Premier League in 2020-2021. But since Grant's haul, Albion's top scorers have been Brandon Thomas Asent with 9, Thomas Asenti again with 12, Josh Mayer with 12, and Hedjibo with 10. It is probably a return of paltry totals Albion need to improve on to land promotion. Hedjibo showed every inch of his finishing qualities in that purple patch between November and December. Some of his goals were excellent, near-post efforts, quick-fire finishes giving defenders and the goalkeeper no chance. His header at Queen's Park Rangers was the finest headers you will see in some time. Obviously, his form in front of goal, either side of then in a dire season for the club, must be improved on. Former boss Ryan Mason was often at pains to stress Hedjibo was playing through knee injury issues, particularly in the autumn, which blighted his settling in period. In the striker's favour will be the summer break ahead. Hedjibo could perhaps have an outside shot at Norway's World Cup squad, though that feels highly unlikely, even after he won 2 maiden caps late last year. He had no break last summer. His brand season began in March, and then he moved to Albion's pre-season. He also appeared in all 46 championship games, 37 of them as a starter. In short, Hedjibo will be exhausted and is due a good break. Morrison tried to get him one where possible during the international break in March. He and defensive colleague George Campbell are in a similar boat as the latter's MLS season pre-Albion ran from February. Hedjibo can hopefully allow the rest to serve him well to improve in front of goal next time around.
It's Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on Thursday, May the 7th. Man Strangled Sex Worker, 41, by Deborah Hardiman. A woman, found dead in a Smethwick back street, had been strangled by her killer, the jury in the murder trial of a West Bromwich delivery driver was told. The semi-naked body of 41-year-old sex worker Shara Miller was found on the pavement in Woodburn Road, Smethwick, shortly after 6:10 a.m. on August the 11th last year. Tanveer Singh, 31, of Leopard Lane, West Bromwich, is standing trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court, charged with her murder. Opening the case yesterday, barrister Miss Rachel Brand, KC, said after a night out with friend, Singh picked up the prostitute in Babington Road on the Handsworth-Smethwick boundary before driving to the industrial estate in Woodburn Road. Miss Brand said it was obvious that the two of them got in the large rear compartment of the Mercedes Sprinter van. By 1:32 a.m. the defendant had come back to the driver's side, started the van and was driving away. He had killed Shara Miller by strangling her. Then, having killed her, he pulled her body out of the van and left her on the pavement like rubbish strewn in the street. She was virtually naked. Miss Bland said the accused poured an engine additive over the victim, and it was unknown whether this was to eliminate any scientific evidence as the final act of humiliation. The body was discovered shortly before 6 a.m. by a worker at the nearby industrial estate. A post-mortem found that Miss Miller, originally from Lincolnshire, had been strangled and her injuries included a number of neck fractures and bruises consistent with blunt force trauma or impact with a hard surface. Singh denies murder, and the trial continues. Does the new two-stop tram extension save much time? By Gurdip Tandy. It's fair to say progress on expanding the tram system in the West Midlands since the first line opened in 1999 has been on the tardy side. Just two modest extensions at each end of the track have emerged since, and both of those were only fully completed and delivered in recent years. The Birmingham West Side expansion from Grand Central came in two phases, with the library stop opening in 2019 and Edgbaston Village being delivered by 2022. Since 2023, Wolverhampton has enjoyed a mini spin-off line which sees some of the trams head towards the rail and bus interchange instead of them all finishing at the original St George's stop. But last month, a brand new extension was unveiled. Joining the near 15 miles of tram track built over 27 years was a new Birmingham City Centre line, which opened up a grand total of, drumroll please, two new stops. Okay, before Transport for West Midlands, Midland Metro Alliance and any other tram lover out there comes for me, I know this is just a small part of the grand Birmingham East Side extension to Digbeth. Work is ongoing on that wider expansion, but will the two new stops in the city centre make much of a difference in the meantime? To find out, I decided to see how long it would take me to walk the route compared with riding the tram along it. Though my physique isn't too dissimilar to that of a Kenyan marathon runner, I am really not the fittest of people. I get tired driving 26 miles, let alone running them. But I still fancied my chances of walking from Grand Central Station to Millennium Point in good time. I left New Street at 8:41, strolled along Corporation Street at a good but sensible pace, arriving at Bull Street, where the new track starts from, at 8:46. I probably should be slightly embarrassed it took me 5 minutes to walk a short way up the road, especially as it then took me a further 6 minutes to make it to Millennium Point, the second of the two new stops. And that is while I was walking with some purpose and not while I enjoyed a leisurely carefree stroll. In my defence, I turned 50 later this year. One sight that did warm the heart along the way was the boards erected around lampposts bearing a warning which goes something along the lines of, "Look out! Trams are on the loose." Looking forward to seeing more of those as the line is expanded. My question on whether it was worth opening a metro extension for just two stops was answered firstly by my obvious lack of fitness, and secondly by the dozen or so students who got off the tram that arrived at Millennium Point. They sure look raring to go for a full day's learning, having saved time and energy hopping aboard in the new tram service. The metro was ready to chauffeur me back from whence I came, and I'd barely settled in my seat when it reached Albert Street, the other of the two new stops, in about a minute. And then, in 5 minutes, I was back at Grand Central. Had we not stopped at two red lights, we'd have been back a bit sooner too. But as I said earlier, while the two new stops are welcome for lazy, unfit people like me, there is a much bigger picture. Work is ongoing on different phases of the East Side extension out to Digbeth, and much of the construction should be completed later this year. Beyond that, there is also the small matter of the new metro's extension from Digbeth to the 3 billion sports quarter regeneration site, ready for the opening of the new Birmingham City Football Club 62,000-seater stadium in 2030. And over in the Black Country, the long-awaited, delayed new tram route from Wensbury to Dudley should finally be open in the summer. The second phase will see that go further out to Merry Hill. We will be seeing many of these boards warning of oncoming trams at the number of new locations in the coming months. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of the tram approaching the new metro stop at Millennium Point in Birmingham. You should be dancing to hit show Night Fever at the Grand. A review. Alison Norton at the Grand Theatre. The popular amateur group West Bromwich Operatic Society takes the stage at Wolverhampton Grand Theatre this week with the all-singing, all-dancing musical Saturday Night Fever, writes Alison Norton. I was a teenager when Night Fever hit back in 1977, so I am fully aware of the impact the movie version catapulting John Travolta to stardom and getting the whole world upon its feet and dancing. In 1998, when the stage show took both Broadway and the West End by storm, and we were given yet another opportunity to revel in the unique and unforgettable music of the Bee Gees and enjoy the dancing talent of Adam Garcia. And now I have the chance to relive such happy times again at my favourite theatre. It would be extremely unfair to compare any actor, but particularly an amateur performer taking the lead role of Tony Manero, with the two leading men mentioned above. And yet, it is inevitable. So, let's put them out of our minds and simply concentrate on Ollie Durham, our Tony for the evening. Tony is a complex character who not only has to have exceptional dancing skills, but a strong dramatic presence, as he is the main focal point of what is actually quite a dark, weak storyline and needs to drive the plot throughout the show. Ollie does this with ease. His stage presence is strong, his commitment to his character is determined, and he has obviously worked tirelessly on his dance technique to achieve the standard required to take on the role. An exceptional effort. Vocally, the evening belonged to the ladies, however. Harriet Hummers, as love interest Stephanie, gave a confident performance, both dramatically and vocally, and her Act Two solo, What Kind of Fool, is a huge highlight. I would like to have seen a little more warmth, which may have enhanced the chemistry in the tender moments. Holly White, as Annette, delivered a superb, laid-bare version of If I Can't Have You, with all the angst and heartbreak of a rejected lover. And I just have to mention the outstanding disco diva Amy Sanford as Candy, whose vocals literally created a disco inferno, bringing the house down. Boy, that girl can sing. Together with Lyndon Flavel as Monty, they produced yet another highlight of the show, More Than a Woman. Experience shows, and there were exceptional dramatic performances from Greg Yates as Frank and Sarah Moores as Flo, Tony's parents, in strong contrast to the frivolity of the majority of the other characters. There was also, and a very natural performance, from Theo Pitter as Joey, who wins the crown for the best American accent. Director Chris Cumming has obviously given it his all to create the best amateur version of the show possible, and while in the main he has succeeded, there were moments in the plot which were a little unclear. That said, this could be the fault of the writer rather than his direction. West Bromwich Operatic Society's resident choreographer Claire Flavel certainly had her work cut out too, with no less than 20 huge musical moments to choreograph throughout the show, but each and every number was a triumph. Learning professional choreography is difficult for amateur performers, and yet the whole company rose to the challenge, offering high energy and complete commitment to the task in hand. There were times when perhaps it might have been better to simplify some of the steps to tidy the movement up, but everyone should be applauded for their confidence, determination, and because of the overall effect was a delight. Couples should be praised for the dance duets performed by Chloe Lowe as Shirley and Jacob Yeomans as Chester, and also Beth Logan as Maria and Martin Davis as Caesar. The set is simple but effective, with a square dais in the middle of the stage which doubles as the iconic light-up dance floor, and costumes courtesy of Jan Cole were completely authentic, colourful and very well chosen to enhance the appearance of specific individuals. Special mention must go to the musical director Ian Room and his band, who romped through the score with conviction, bringing the disco vibe in abundance and taking the audience straight back to the 1970s. Although the storyline is somewhat depressing and weak, the other aspects of Saturday Night Fever make it a show worth watching, and you should want to raise your spirits. You should be dancing. It runs until Saturday. See grandtheatre.co.uk or call 01902 429 212. And the article is accompanied by pictures of the ladies dancing in very brightly coloured costumes, with Amy Sanford at the front as Candy, a picture of Ollie Durham as Tony Manero sitting with a coffee cup in front of him at a table, and his leather jacket and his bright red trousers. And then the top picture, the main picture, is the cast of Saturday Night Fever performing with the Amateur Musical Theatre Group, with the three main guy characters at the front wearing white shirts and white trousers with the shirts split right the way down the front. Very exciting. Police continue to crack down on shoplifting. West Midlands Police's Sandwell South said that they've charged a number of people in relation to shoplifting in the Black Country. Alexander Shaw, who is 35 and from Birmingham, has been charged with 15 shop theft offences. He's been remanded in custody to appear at court in May. Furthermore, a woman aged 26 from Wolverhampton has been charged with 4 shop theft offences and is due to appear in court this month. Similarly, a 39-year-old woman was given 26 weeks in prison after committing 3 shop theft offences, and a 34-year-old man was sentenced to 16 weeks in jail for 6 shop theft offences, and a 39-year-old man was sentenced to 8 months in prison after committing 8 shop theft offences. Likewise, a man aged 34 was jailed for more than 8 months after breaching a criminal behaviour order and committing 6 shop thefts. We've had some really good results and we are determined to pursue those who are persistently targeting businesses and shops, said Sergeant Jason Waters, Sandwell South Retail Crime Team. No one should feel intimidated at work and no one should feel threatened. I'm sorry if that sounded a bit strange, but 6 shop thefts was quite difficult. It was a bit like a tongue twister. Dealer waits to see how much he must repay. A proceeds of crime hearing to decide how much a convicted drugs dealer must pay back has been adjourned. Kavanveer Pahal was jailed for 4.5 years in December after pleading guilty at Wolverhampton Crown Court to possession of cocaine with intent to supply. He was arrested in West Bromwich High Street on October the 24th when his Mitsubishi vehicle was surrounded by unmarked police cars. In a bid to escape, Pahal, then of Salisbury Road, West Bromwich, rammed a police car, but was arrested. A carrier bag found on him with rocks of cocaine was estimated to contain between £52,000 and £60,000 worth of drugs. Pahal, 26, appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court on link from HMP Sudbury. Defence counsel Balbir Singh argued whether the value of drugs could be attributed to his client as a benefit and claimed the length of sentence was inconsistent with the crime. The defence has now applied for a Section 17 ruling under the Proceeds of Crime Act 2002 to try to come up with a solution and agreement between them and the Crown as to whether the defendant would have benefited and by how much. Judge John Butterfield adjourned the case until June the 10th.
Hello there, it's Gavin, and I've got some readings for you here from the 8th of May. Archers on tour in region to mark 75 years of legendary radio soap. Fans of BBC Radio 4's long-running countryside drama, The Archers, are in for a treat when the actors and crew bring its 75th anniversary live show to Wolverhampton. The theatrical experience will give audiences an experience of the fictional village of Ambridge, with the help of sound engineering as well as a chance to put faces to some of the main characters when the show lands at the University of Wolverhampton at the Civic Hall on November 26th. Touring from June to November, the live production brings the iconic radio drama out of the studio and onto the stage. First broadcast on January the 1st, 1951, The Archers is the world's longest running radio drama. Broadcasting 6 times a week to millions of listeners, the programme follows the everyday lives, loves and dramas of the residents of the fictional village of Ambridge, deep in the heart of the English countryside. Over the course of more than 20,000 episodes, the show has chronicled significant social and cultural changes in Britain, dealing with complex contemporary issues alongside the traditional rhythms of rural life, earning its place as a cornerstone of the British cultural landscape. Today, it remains one of the BBC's most popular programmes and regularly tops the list of most popular on-demand programmes for listeners under 35 on BBC Sounds. The Archers, live at 75 stage production, is set within a playful reimagining of the Ambridge Flair and Produce show and blends theatrics with nostalgia, comedy and the behind-the-scenes insight. The evening will include on-stage interviews, insider stories and gossip. Live performances with Foley sound effects of specially written scenes created exclusively for the tour, archive treasures spanning 7 decades from the BBC vaults, fascinating demonstrations of the sound effects artistry that brings the fields, kitchens and barns of Ambridge to life. There will be an opportunity for audience questions. a quiz at the Bull Pub and a sing-along to the programme's famous theme tune. The show will be at the North Street on November 26th at 7:30 p.m. and before that on September 9th at Birmingham Symphony Hall. The Archers is aired on Radio 4 six times a week, Sunday to Friday at 7 p.m. and on iPlayer. For tickets, visit the booking website. I feel scared around men. Rape victim tells of trauma. Asylum seeker attacked woman who asked to use toilet in shop he worked at. An emotional victim personal statement from a woman who was raped in a shop toilet in Wednesbury heard how her life has changed in every way since the attack. The 24-year-old who had been on a night out with friends was targeted by shop worker Hotak Waledula after she went in and asked to use the toilet. She said she still struggles to sleep to this day, feels numb since the incident happened, and no longer wishes to speak to people or go out socially. The victim said she went through painful and upsetting examinations after the attack that she described as degrading and embarrassing, and was subsequently administered antidepressants by her GP. Since the attack, she has lost one of her jobs because of the emotional trauma and now finds it hard to engage with the public. Wahidulla, aged 18, but who was 17 at the time of the attack on February 27th last year, was yesterday jailed for 10 years at Birmingham Crown Court after earlier being found guilty of two counts of rape. In the statement read out by prosecuting counsel Simon Phillips, she said, "I feel more scared around all men now. I am a gay woman and have very little experience with men sexually, and this is why the assault was so devastating and upsetting for me. Since it happened, I have just wanted to stay in my room in bed. I find it hard to get undressed and sleep, mainly in my clothes. I don't want to go out, text or talk to anyone, and don't want to put makeup on when I do go out. I cry a lot. I don't feel happy and find it hard to talk to people," the victim added. "My quality of life has been massively impacted, and I've gone from being happy and confident and going out with friends day and night to being sad and lonely," her mother told Express and Star prior to the sentencing. "He has devastated and messed her life up. She's been terrible," she said. "She will never get to normal. I don't think. It's heartbreaking, especially to see as a mother." In summing up, Judge Simon Drew KC said Wahidulla had come to the UK from Afghanistan in 2023 and was the subject of a Home Office investigation into his status. He said that has bearing on the sentence. It is for the Home Office to decide on that. And although the defendant had no previous convictions, I am satisfied that the severity of this attack means he poses a significant risk to the public. Speaking directly to the defendant, he said, "You took advantage of the victim in this case when she asked to use the toilet in the shop at which you were working at. You took her to the rear of the store, and during that time you must have realised that she was intoxicated and very vulnerable. You were arrested the following day and answered no comment when you were interviewed. When you gave evidence, you claimed the victim had initiated sexual activity, but by their verdict, the jury rejected that account. Jury hears it is not possible to pinpoint the cause of injuries. The jury in the trial of a West Bromwich man accused of murdering a sex worker has been told it was not possible to say what caused bruises found on her head. The body of Shara Miller was found in Woodburn Road in Smethwick shortly after 6:10 a.m. on August the 11th last year. Delivery driver Tanveer Singh, 31, of Leopard Lane, West Bromwich, is accused of her murder. Giving evidence for the prosecution yesterday, Home Office forensic pathologist Dr. Charlotte Randall told Wolverhampton Crown Court it was not possible to say how she sustained her injuries. Jurors have been told that Miss Miller had been strangled to death. Miss Miller, who was 41, was found on the pavement by a worker arriving at nearby industrial units. Singh denies murder. The trial continues. Water company details drought plans amid fears Super El Nino looms. With the weather getting warmer and the threat of a Super El Nino on the horizon,
concerns have been raised about potential future droughts. The weather phenomenon spells an increased possibility of a prolonged hot and dry summer for the UK. And this year, climate scientists predict it could create extreme weather conditions for many. The UK's Met Office said there is growing confidence that this event could sit at the upper end of the historical range. Scientists are telling us that this could be the strongest El Nino event so far this century, and it could mean more extreme weather and record global temperatures. The fear stems from last year's drought in the West Midlands and wider country, with both Severn Trent and South Staffs Water putting measures into place to cope with lower reservoir levels. South Staffs Water Director of Water Quality and Environment, Natalie Ackroyd, said contingency plans were already in place. She said, "Droughts are always a concern. Last year, our reservoir in Blythfield dropped to around 40%, which was the lowest ever recorded. But this year, we have had a really good head start. We've had high rainfall over the winter period, and the reservoir is sitting at 100%. Miss Ackroyd said drought was always a possibility, and while the future remained uncertain, the company was focused on ensuring the water keeps flowing.
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday, the 9th of May's Express and Star. College team are proud to win King's Award. There have been celebrations this week after a transformative partnership between Sandwell College and Birmingham-based hydraulics business received the Royal Seal of Approval. Sandwell College and Hydropower Dynamics in Birmingham have both been named as recipients of the prestigious King's Award for Enterprise for promoting opportunity through social mobility. The college has received the honour in recognition of its groundbreaking collaboration with Hydropower Dynamics, a global leader in hose and tube manufacturing solutions, and their jointly developed Go Further programme, which has been transforming opportunities for young people and strengthening the region's engineering talent pipeline. Hydropower Dynamics has also been honoured with the award. Working together, the two organisations have co-designed a programme, Substantial Industrial Placements, for T-level and Level 3 vocational students, with access to facilities, machinery and live projects, giving learners unparalleled exposure to modern engineering environments. Nationally, there were just 22 organisations selected for promoting opportunity. The Lord Lieutenant of the West Midlands, Derek Anderson CBE, said, "The awards for promoting opportunities through social mobility were a great credit to their organisation's leadership and workforce. The Go Further initiative was developed to help young people in the local area, particularly those from disadvantaged backgrounds, who have struggled to transition from education into meaningful careers and lack the confidence or opportunity to do so. College bosses said despite completing vocational qualifications, students often lack the real-world experience needed to secure roles in competitive sectors such as mechanical engineering. The Go Further programme, however, has been transformative, and more than 100 learners have completed industry placements, with 8 young engineers employed over the last 18 months, with 6 students progressing directly from placement to full-time engineering roles at Hydropower Dynamics. The college is also working with a range of employers to give students the chance to progress into good jobs or higher education, higher apprenticeships or STEM pathways to help secure a bright future." Lisa Kappa, MBE, College Principal and CEO, was delighted to see the work of the college and Hydropower Dynamics recognised. She said the college team was deeply honoured and immensely proud to receive the King's Award for Enterprise. Political revolution as Labour grip on Borough blown apart. It was nothing short of a political revolution in Sandwell as reform blew apart Labour's previous dominance. Sandwell has been held by Labour for 51 of the past 52 years, but that changed in one dramatic day of counting as the local election results brought a new regime into power. The final result gave Reform 41 seats and an outright majority. Labour secured 28 seats, the Greens 2. There was one independent and the Conservatives did not win a single seat. The new leader-elect of Sandwell Council spoke of his pride following Reform's UK's stunning victory in what was a Labour stronghold. Councillor Raynock said he was thrilled with the result and pledged to get Sandwell working again. He said his first task would be to meet with the council's finance officers to look at the books. I have been working so hard for the past 3 years to put all this together, so now it's a proud moment. But he repeated his promise to reintroduce free parking on council car parks, a measure which he said would be in place within weeks. It is a remarkable comeback for Councillor Nock, who had previously served as a Conservative councillor before losing his seat in 2012. He sent commiserations and best wishes to outgoing leader Labour's Kerry Carmichael, who lost her seat to Reform, saying, "I've known Kerry for a long time and I feel for her. I know what it's like. I went through it when I lost my seat in 2012. I wish her all the best." Since the authority was created in 1974, Sandwell has been Labour-controlled for all but one of its 52 years. The Conservatives briefly took control in May 1978, but Labour retook it the following year and has held it with little difficulty ever since. Throughout the Conservative landslides of the 1980s, the council remained solidly red. While the Iraq War, the 2008 recession and the election of a handful of BNP councillors loosened its grip in the 2000s, its dominance never looked in any real danger. And before this election, the party held 63 of the council's 72 seats, with the opposition Tories being able to muster just 4 councillors in reply. Ms Carmichael said she was looking forward to taking a break from politics after losing her seat, saying she was proud of her 4 years in charge of the authority. "I'm leaving with my head held high. I've spent the last 4 years working really hard to turn this council round. I think I've done that and left it in good shape for someone else," she said. "I hope they don't mess it up." She said people had used the election to voice their disquiet with the government. Some of the polls said Labour would be obliterated in Sandwell, but that has not happened. "I'm pleased for the ones who are still there." She said she was not sure whether she would stand for election again. "At the moment, I would say not. I'm getting on a bit and could do with a break. The first thing I'm thinking about is a holiday." Keeping it clean and doing it for boys across the world. It ain't easy being clean, or is it? Recently, some surprising stats came across my desk, including a term I should probably be embarrassed to say I'd never heard of. A recent survey has suggested that 7 in 10, 71%, British women feel clean envy when they see other people's spotless homes online. This is supposedly linked to the rise of the clean girl aesthetic, the unknown term in question, on TikTok and Instagram, which is reportedly leaving many women feeling anxious about the state of their own abode. The survey goes on to suggest that 31% of women find the constant pressure to have a tidy home stressful or anxiety-inducing, while only 12% of men feel the same. As I have since discovered, the clean girl aesthetic refers to a trend of fashion, lifestyle and decor that focuses on minimalism and effortless elegance. There you go, I learned a thing. What surprised me, though, was the stat suggesting that not even half as many men as women find the pressure to be tidy stressful. Almost a quarter, 24%, of women have supposedly even cancelled social plans because they felt their home was too messy. And 17% reportedly admit they regularly re-clean after their partner, blaming Miss Corners, 22%, using the wrong products, 14%, and failing to lift things when cleaning underneath, 12%. The results of the survey certainly point towards an emotional toll caused by keeping up appearances for your social media audience. But also, and again surprisingly, an apparently continued gender divide in housework. Firstly, anyone stressing out over cleaning their house because they are desperate to make a good impression on strangers via Instagram needs to get a grip. Secondly, in this day and age, I find it quite difficult to believe that blokes are less clean conscious than women. Before I go on, I will say that I'm not naturally an excessively tidy person, and there are plenty of partners past who I'm sure will testify to this. But I'm not a slob either, and certainly since being a bona fide adult, I've been conscious of doing my bit in any living situation to at least keep the abode from falling into utter ruin. These days, the population of my household consists of me, my father, a toddler, and a black Labrador. So, with only two people able to clean up the exuberant mess made by the rambunctious populace as a whole, you better believe that in my house, the blokes get stuck in and get it done. Admittedly, our setup is a special case, but I find it difficult to believe that in mixed-gender households, as the survey suggests, women still tend to be much more house-proud than men. An old mate of mine has recently bought a home for the first time. After patiently going through the gruelling trial by fire that he's saving to get on the property ladder, he is as proud as punch with his new home, and rightly so. For how hard fought it was to purchase. I suspect he will be ever quick to get the hoover out for the rest of his days to ensure his abode is being shown off to its greatest potential. When I first bought a house, I was exactly the same. Buying a home can be hard work. More help there for youngsters, please. And when you finally hit that incredible milestone, said home becomes an expression of achievement and pride, like few other things in your world. With this in mind, I can attest to many male friends who are just as house-proud as their partners and delight in rolling up their sleeves to make sure their home reflects them in the best light. I'm sure that the influence of clean girl aesthetic pioneers like Sophie Hinchcliffe and Molly Mae Haig is contributing greatly to female house pride amongst millennials and Gen Zers, but I don't write the clean boys off just yet. As I've learned, and perhaps a little late, it ain't that hard being clean, and it's actually quite a good thing for your mental health. So here's to the chaps across the land who proudly wield their feather duster like a broadsword. I'm not buying the 12% malarkey, and I'm sure the boys of the West Mids and Shropshire could all show the world how it's done. One sheet does plenty, but we do even more.
Hello everyone, this is Pam with some articles from the Express and Star, Monday the 11th of May. Metal artist unveils a sculpture dedicated to Zeppelin bombing. Prominent black country metal sculptor Luke Perry has announced that his latest work of art will focus on the Tipton Zeppelin bombing raid of 1916 and those who were killed in collateral damage. The sculpture, passionately named Bella Detesta Matribus, or War is Hateful to Mothers, depicts a mother cradling her son as she looks up to the sky towards a bomb and the Zeppelin which released it. The sculpture will pay tribute to those of the 1916 Tipton Zeppelin bombing raid, which saw 14 people killed by German Zeppelins during the First World War. Talking about the sculpture, Mr. Perry said, "Working with the family and the families of the victims and those communities, what we found is that the thing the people missed the most was the loss of the mothers and children. What we thought is that this is quite a unique opportunity to talk about this historic event, but at the same time make something that is very relevant in contemporary society today." Mr. Perry said that the sculpture is made more poignant by the current world climate, saying that the piece is truly dedicated to those who became collateral damage in the world's wars. He said, "With all the wars going on, Ukraine, Syria, Iran, this is all stuff that is happening around the world now. These subjects, even the title, are thousands of years old and will keep repeating. In its heart, this is a piece about what happens in wars, the collateral damage, the civilians. It is an anti-war piece, whilst also being a war memorial. It's quite unique." Bella Detesta Matribus is set to be unveiled on the anniversary of the Tipton Zeppelin raid on January the 31st, 2027. Luke and his work can be found on Instagram by searching for @ Luke Perry Sculptor. Green councillors toast party's first ever election victories in Sandwell. The Green Party has secured its first ever election victories in Sandwell following a dramatic shake-up in the borough's local elections. Hilary Grundy and John Tipper won two of the three contested seats in the Barewood ward this week, with Labour's Jennifer Hemingway retaining the remaining seat. The result marks a milestone for the Greens in Sandwell, where the party had previously only gained representation through councillors defecting from other parties rather than through victories at the ballot box. Speaking after the count, newly elected councillor Grundy said the result reflected strong local support for community-focused politics. "Our team has worked hard all year round for Barewood, and we knew on the doorstep that people wanted to look after each other and the environment," she said. "I would like to thank the voters for giving me the chance to serve you." Councillor Tipper said voters had become frustrated with Labour's direction nationally and were seeking an alternative. "People could see that the important business of delivering local services was being compromised by Labour's national lurch to the right," he said. "We are happy to offer Sandwell people a fight for better equality, justice and sustainability, which we know local people want," added Councillor Tipper. Households are now stashing supplies in case of emergency. Some people are storing items such as physical cash, torches and tinned goods at home so that they could turn to them in the event of an emergency, according to a survey for Cash Access and ATM Network Link. The research found that items are being stashed in homes that could be used in the event of a major disruptive event such as a cyber attack, a natural disaster or an IT failure. When asked specifically what people do to prepare for this type of major event, alongside the 17% of people who said they have a stash of cash at home, nearly half, 49%, have a battery-powered torch, 47% have a supply of tinned goods, and 37% have a charged power bank in the house to keep their phone going. The survey, carried out in March, also asked people about their cash use in the previous 2 weeks. Around 6 in 10, that's 61%, of people surveyed said they had used cash in the previous fortnight. The proportion has fallen from 69% in 2025 and 73% in 2024, Link said. The latest research found that contactless cards, 42%, and using a phone, 30%, are the preferred methods for people making day-to-day payments in store. Link also found that 10% of people said they are fully cashless, but more than 1 in 10, 13%, of people still said they prefer to pay in cash, including 16% of people surveyed who are aged 55 plus. Some 45% of people surveyed said they find not accepting cash inconvenient. Six arrested after disorder. Six youths have been arrested in connection with an outbreak of violent disorder in Great Barr. West Midlands police were called to reports of disorder in Old Walsall Road, Great Barr, at 3:50 p.m. on Wednesday, where multiple people were seen fighting with weapons. Officers attended and six people were identified and arrested on suspicion of violent disorder. A sword was also recovered after it was spotted by the police's drones team in some bushes. The six, aged between 16 and 19, have all been bailed. Support service that's helped hundreds of families hits 10-year milestone. A Black Country support service that helps families of neurodivergent children is celebrating 10 years of making a difference in the local community. Family Action's Helping Hands service has supported more than 1,000 families since launching in 2016, offering practical advice, a listening ear, and welcoming spaces for parents and carers whose children may be autistic, have ADHD, or other additional needs. From the outset, the team worked closely with parents across Sandwell, meeting them in schools, children's centres and community groups to understand what support was missing and what would help most. Over the past decade, Helping Hands has grown from small volunteer-led play sessions and parent groups into a trusted, flexible service that continues to adapt to families' needs. This has included after-school and holiday play and stay sessions, relaxed parent groups and workshops offering practical ways to support children during difficult moments. One parent said, "I just wanted to say thank you for everything too. I have gained more and genuinely felt supported, heard and validated by you and the course in these few sessions more than by the school in the past 2 or 3 years." As demand has grown, the service has developed into a small but dedicated staffed team. Sam Edwards, service manager at Family Action's Helping Hands service, said, "Celebrating 10 years is a particularly poignant moment for me and one I'm incredibly proud of. We started at a time when there was very little support in Sandwell for families of young neurodivergent children. We may be a small team, but we're passionate about making a big difference." Another parent added, "Thank you for the course and support. It has helped my confidence a lot with the battles we have, both in general and at school." Family Action says the service's success is rooted in staying close to families and continuing to evolve, so support remains relevant, accessible and grounded in real experiences. Parents and carers in Sandwell can access Helping Hands for practical guidance, connection with others and a safe, understanding community. Visit Helping Hands, Autism and ADHD Behaviour Support, Family Action for more.
Hi, Sophie here from Wonder in Nature. I'm going to tell you about a walk that SVI members joined on the 7th of May. They joined myself from Wonder in Nature and Jane from Chance Heritage Trust on an Access to Heritage walk in West Smethwick Park. Prior to the 1800s, West Smethwick area was farmland, including Blakely Hall Farm, which was used by Thomas Shutt to develop glassworks in 1815. The glassworks were purchased by the Chance brothers in 1922. The development of the Chance glassworks created a community within this now industrial area of West Smethwick, which now included canals and a railway, and the streets of housing present today represent that industrial heritage. In 1895, James Timmins Chance donated West Smethwick Park as a gift to the public forever, preserving a vital green space of around 50 acres. The park originally had a 5-acre boating lake with island fed by a stream and decorative fountain, a boathouse with a landing stage and a bandstand. During the heritage walk, SVI members stood on the previous location of the boathouse and heard about the history of boating, ice skating and open air bathing. We also heard about some of the history during the war when some of the space was used as allotments, and Bill was able to have history about armaments and a bomb shelter that were discovered during some construction works. Sandwell Visually Impaired got special access to enter the James Timmins Chance Memorial and explore by touch, navigating the steps and sitting in the brick carved chairs. We also visited the Drinking Fountain Memorial to John Homer Chance, which was erected in 1905. We explored the mosaics created by Caroline Jerewala of Mango Mosaics, which tells the story of some of the legacy of the Chance glassworks. We traced with hands the lighthouse shape and textures. We then sat in the sunshine outside the cafe while Jane from Chance Heritage Trust talked about some of the glass samples she'd brought along, and you can hear that extract next. I hope you enjoy.
This is a box, if you want to. It's a box that was used to be taken round by the salesman. It says Chance Brothers Co Limited, Glassworks, Birmingham and Glasgow, because they opened a branch in Glasgow and also in Birmingham, so they used to make all the decorative glass in Glasgow. They actually designed, you know, the word fiberglass.
Yeah.
That was patented and copyrighted by Chance. They made up the word fiberglass, which I only discovered the other day, and I saw a picture. Oh, they made a dress out of fiberglass. They made a dress out of fiberglass. What I'd like to do is, the glass is so textural, I'm thinking eventually of Good Create, which has a story, we have to use a lot of glass in it. That's the mistake.
That was Sophie and some of the group who enjoy the relaxation and mindfulness walks in Smethwick usually, although I think it is in other areas, they happen every Thursday. If you can make it, and that was to give you some idea of the sort of things people enjoy on those walks.
My name's Chelsea, and I'm from Utilitar West Bromwich Hub on the High Street.
And I'm Connor, I'm also an energy expert for Utilitar West Bromwich Hub. Us ourselves, we focus on gas and electricity, but we also give back to the community, so we can give basic advice on things such as water, and if we can't answer, we can definitely signpost you to the correct place.
But the really special thing about Utilitar, unlike so many companies, is they're very, very local in West Bromwich High Street.
We're based on the High Street, just next door to Germadonna Kebab, just as you come out of the Astor car park onto the High Street. If you take a right and it's just a few doors down.
You're almost opposite the town hall?
We are, yes.
You do electricity and gas?
Yes.
And people can phone you?
Yes, 0345 207 2000.
Urgent Treatment Centre. The Urgent Treatment Centre is based at Sandwell Health Campus, formerly Sandwell Hospital, West Bromwich, and is accessible to all patients. It offers GP-led urgent but not emergency care for ailments such as suspected broken bones, abdominal pain and minor illnesses. Patients from all areas are able to attend. However, if they are not registered with a GP, they will be asked to sign up. The centre is open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. Appointments can be made by calling NHS 111 or you can walk in. For life-threatening emergency care, please go to the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital A&E department, which is located in Grove Lane, Smethwick.
Some audio-described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Diane, welcoming you to your audio-described TV programme starting Saturday 16th and ending Friday 22nd of May, which has been written by Christine. Starting with Saturday, Channel 4's American sitcoms run from 6 a.m. to 12:35, while over on BBC Two, Bill Bailey introduces us to some eccentric animals who turn oddness into opportunity in Nature's Misfits at 8:30 a.m. James Martin begins the Texan leg of his American adventure by visiting San Antonio on ITV at 12:45, and then you have an afternoon film choice on Channel 4 at 1:05 p.m. Teen comedy, 10 Things I Hate About You. Andy Oliver heads to Bridlington in her Fabulous Feasts cookery series at 2 o'clock on BBC Two. And there's more for foodies at 5:35 on Channel 4 with Jamie's Ultimate Barbecue. Your evening choices begin at 7 p.m. on BBC Two with the start of a new six-part series, Treasures of the National Trust, while Channel 4 takes you to the Yorkshire Moors for Steam Train Diaries. At 8, you can choose from BBC One's Eurovision Song Contest Grand Final, live from Vienna, two episodes of ITV's It'll Be All Right on the Night, Channel 4's World's Most Secret Hotels, and on BBC Two, Churchill must decide whether to negotiate with Hitler or fight for the greater good in the film Darkest Hour. There are three more evening film options for you. On ITV, it's action crime drama The Batman at 9:15, and on Channel 4, thriller sequel The Equalizer 2 at 9 o'clock, and historical drama The Last Duel at 11:20 p.m. On to Sunday. American sitcoms run through Sunday morning on Channel 4, while on BBC One you have the Minions film at 10:30 a.m, followed at 11:55 by three short films based on Julia Donaldson's Zog books. The afternoon begins with Alan Titchmarsh helping to create a sensory wonderland for a five-year-old with severe epilepsy in Love Your Garden on ITV at 12:25, whilst BBC One offers Bargain Hunt at 1:50, followed by two episodes of The Americas from 2:35. There are two musical comedy film choices on Sunday afternoon. The classic Gentlemen Prefer Blondes on BBC Two at 2:30, and the sequel Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again on ITV at 3:05. Kirsty and Phil continue to Love It or List It on Channel 4 at 4:35, followed by George Clark's Amazing Spaces at 5:35. Into the evening, it's The Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer on Channel 4 at 7, and An Expedition with Steve Backshall on BBC 2 at 7:15, whilst BBC 1 has the first of a six-part series, Death Valley, at 8:15. You can travel to Alaska with Channel 4's Cruising to the Ends of the Earth at 8 p.m. and from the fjords of Norway to Iceland with Simon Reeve in his Scandinavia series on BBC Two at 9. Also at 9, ITV series Believe Me continues. There's the penultimate episode of BBC One's The Cage, and it's the grand final for the singers in Your Song on Channel 4, followed by Gogglebox at 10:05. Australian mystery drama The Family Next Door kicks off with two episodes on ITV at 10:20 and 11:20, and then you have two late-night film choices. On BBC Two at 10:50, two brothers navigate grief and tenderness amid Toronto's ganglands in Brother, and on Channel 4 at 11:05, three superhumans team up to escape a psychiatric ward in Glass. Now the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. Channel 4 has episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:50 a.m. and Frasier from 9:10 a.m. Find It, Fix It, Flog It is at 12:10 p.m. Escape to Florida is at 4 and Chateau DIY is at 5. BBC One's Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:30 a.m. and The Repair Shop on the Road is at 3:45 p.m. ITV's Dickinson's Real Deal is at 2 p.m. BBC Two explores the wonders of life with Professor Brian Cox at 3:30 p.m. and follows Michael Portillo's Great Continental Railway Journeys at 6:30 p.m. Then for the soaps, EastEnders at 7:30 on BBC One every weekday except Friday, Emmerdale at 8 o'clock and Coronation Street at 8:30 on ITV every weekday. Now on to Monday. Into the evening, and archaeologists are digging for Britain again on BBC Two at 7, and it's Back to the Doghouse on Channel 4 at 8. Your 9 o'clock choices are the final episode of The Cage on BBC One, Lucy Worsley investigating the explosive 18th century breakup between Britain and America on BBC Two, Episode 4 of ITV series Believe Me and Channel 4's Virgin Island. At 10, there's another Virgin Island on Channel 4, while over on BBC Two, Mortimer and Whitehouse have gone fishing. And at 10:45, ITV has two episodes of its Australian mystery drama, The Family Next Door. The final episode of BBC Two's The Nevada Casino Heist is at 11. It's First Dates on Channel 4 at 11:05. And you have a film option on BBC One at 11:10, Crazy Rich Asians, where a New Yorker discovers her boyfriend is from one of Singapore's wealthiest families. On Tuesday, Bargain Hunt is on BBC One at 12:15. Then it's into the evening with Alan Carr's Interior Design Masters on BBC One and Jamie's Ultimate Barbecue on Channel 4. These are both at 8 p.m. At 9 o'clock, Knockout Week begins with the hopefuls working in a restaurant for the first time in MasterChef on BBC One. True Crime Presents is on ITV, and there's the start of a new six-part series on Channel 4. Devoted nun Anna's attraction to priest Father David threatens to disrupt her peaceful life in Falling. Naturalist Steve Batchel takes you on a new expedition series at 9:45 on BBC Two, and you have 24 Hours in A&E on Channel 4 at 10:05, followed by Celebrity Gogglebox at 11:10. BBC One's Half Man series is at 10:40, and there are two episodes of The Family Next Door on ITV from 10:45. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. The Future with Hannah Fry investigates whether artificial intelligence can read our emotions better than a human on BBC Two, while Alison Hammond's For the Love of Dogs is on ITV, both of these at 7:30 p.m. MasterChef continues on BBC One at 8, and at 9 you have a choice of Amandaland on BBC One, Surgeons at the Edge of Life on BBC Two, A Taste for Murder on ITV, and the second episode of Falling on Channel 4. BBC One's Only Child series is at 9:30, and from 10 o'clock on Channel 4, a two-part documentary, Marilyn and the Mob, tells the story of how Marilyn Monroe was caught at the centre of a volatile power struggle in 1950s Hollywood. Now on to Thursday. Rue Irvine presents a special edition of Bargain Hunt on BBC One at 12:15, revisiting Asian items which have appeared on the show. And on BBC Two at 2:45, a Sydney socialite and an ex-London lawyer inherit a vineyard in New Zealand in the start of a six-part drama series, Under the Vines. It's the final of Race Across the World at 8 on BBC One, with the teams facing one last test of endurance to reach the finish line in Mongolia. Then at 9, you can hear their stories 6 months on in Race Across the World, The Reunion. Whitby, Scarborough and Filey feature in Yorkshire by the Sea on Channel 4 at 8. And at 9, you have Channel 4's Taskmaster, ITV's Long Lost Family, and on BBC Two, The Elon Musk Show, which explores the tech billionaire's takeover of Twitter and his evolution into a controversial political figure. Action fantasy The Dark Knight Rises is your evening film option at 10:45, and you have Surgeons at the Edge of Life on BBC Two at 11 and Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 11:05. Finally, on to Friday. Pet-related pieces which have featured in the show are revisited in a special edition of Bargain Hunt at 12:15 on BBC One, and BBC Two's Under the Vines series continues at 2:45. You can visit Greatest Gardens at 7 on BBC Two, and at 7:30 you have Bradley and Barney Walsh in Breaking Dad, or BBC One's The Marvellous Miniature Workshop. At 8 p.m, the remaining 10 chefs are tasked with making the perfect pizza in MasterChef on BBC One. And on Channel 4, you can visit the world's biggest curry restaurant, followed by Gogglebox at 9 and First Dates at 10. Over on BBC Two at 9, Altrincham Hall in Shropshire and Ickworth House in Suffolk are featured in Hidden Treasures of the National Trust. And Mrs Brown's Boys are on BBC One at 9:30. You have two film choices this evening, The Batman on ITV at 10:45 and a film anthology of classic Monty Python sketches in And Now for Something Completely Different on BBC Two at 11 p.m, with BBC One airing two episodes of St Denis Medical from 11:40 p.m. That's it for this week. We do hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
Hello, I'm David, and I'm bringing you some radio highlights for this coming week that I hope you will enjoy listening to in the days ahead. Start with Saturday the 16th of May. Radio Times Choice 60 Years of Hurt. First in a new series exploring the meaning of England and Englishness through the history of the English men's football team. David Badiel takes us back to the memorable events of 1966, and that's on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, repeated on Monday at 3:30 p.m. Today's vintage comedy is an episode of Beyond Our Ken on Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m, repeated at 2:30 and 8:30 p.m. Also on Radio 4 Extra is Equus, the psychodrama by Sir Peter Shaffer, where a psychiatrist tries to unravel the mystery as to why a 17-year-old stable boy would injure the horses in his care. That's on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. Opera on 3 is Britain's The Turn of the Screw on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. And today is the final of the Eurovision Song Contest, and you can hear all the action live from the Vienna City Hall from 8 p.m. to midnight on Radio 2. And then Sunday, the 17th of May. Sunday worship this morning comes from Cardiff on Radio 4 at 8:10 a.m. Lauren Laverne's guest on this week's Desert Island Discs is Gary O'Donoghue, the BBC's chief North American correspondent. Gary lost his sight in childhood and speaks of the challenges of not being able to observe what is happening. Desert Island Discs is on Radio 4 at 10 a.m, repeated on Friday at 9 a.m. Private Passions on Radio 3 brings you an interview with the historian Michael Wood, and that's on Radio 3 at midday. Today's Vintage Comedy is a 1966 episode with Frankie Howard on Radio 4 Extra at 3:30 and 9:30 p.m. And at 5 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra, you can listen to a 2020 edition of Desert Island Discs with the naturalist Steve Backshall. Desert Island Discs Revisited is on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. Choral Evensong on the Eve of Ascension comes from Bristol Cathedral. That's on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. Just One Thing with Michael Mosley. Have a cup of tea, explaining the helpful and relaxing benefits of drinking tea. And that's on Radio 4 at 7:45 p.m. And now for some programmes that are broadcast each weekday at the same time. The Essay, Full Moon on Progress Street, is on Radio 3 each day at 9:45 a.m. Book of the Week on Radio 4 continues with episodes 6 to 10 of Weimar, the story of the residents of the German town of Weimar during the rise and reign of Hitler, on Radio 4 at 11:45 each morning. In Rinsed, Kate Lamble continues her examination of the UK water industry. That's on Radio 4 each day at 1:45 p.m. Radio 3's Composer of the Week is the 16th century Italian composer Pier Luigi da Palestrina, each day at 4 p.m. on Radio 3. This week's Book at Bedtime continues reading Hunger and Thirst by Claire Fuller. Radio 4, 10:45 p.m. each evening. Monday the 18th of May. Today's Vintage Comedy selection is a 1976 episode of Dad's Army on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Classical Live with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra is at 1 p.m. on Radio 3. And The Conversation on the BBC World Service delves into the scam of romance fraud, speaking to two victims about their experiences. That's 1:30 p.m. on BBC World Service, repeated at 10:30 p.m. In Great Lives on Radio 4, Matthew Paris and Adrian Edmondson nominate the late British folk rock singer-songwriter Sandy Denny. Radio 4 at 3 p.m. Radio 3 in Concert this evening brings you an evening with the LSO from the Barbican, with music from Britten, Bernstein and Tchaikovsky. 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. Now Tuesday, the 19th of May. Screenshot on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. explores how Mel Brooks, who'll be 100 in June, turned satire into an art form. That's Radio 4 at 11 a.m. And Vintage Comedy on Radio 4 Extra is a 1958 episode of The Goon Show, and that's at 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. In the Studio presents an interview with Thomas Keneally, the 90-year-old author of Schindler's Ark, and that's 1:30 p.m. on BBC World Service, repeated at 10:30 p.m. Radio Times Choice, Trimerous, Three Heroines Unearthed, a drama by Kamal Khan celebrating the stories of three British female horticulturalists, and that's on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. Another Radio Times Choice, a profile of Martha Graham, considered by many to be the mother of modern dance. Mother, 100 Years of Martha Graham Dance, is on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. And then on to Wednesday, the 20th of May. To Catch a King, examining how the people smuggling trade has evolved. And that's on Radio 4 at 9:30 a.m. Hancock's Half Hour is today's vintage comedy with an episode from 1955 on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. Choral Evensong with the BBC Singers comes from St Paul's Knightsbridge on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. And in the Friendly Virus, science journalist Marnie Chesterton reports on developments on bacteriophages, viruses so small that they can attack and kill other viruses that have become resistant to antibiotics. And that's on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. And the Ulster Orchestra features in Radio 3 in concert with music from Stravinsky and Schubert on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. The comic spy novel So Very Secret by Barbara Pym is dramatised on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m, repeated at 9 p.m. Then on to Thursday, the 21st of May. The Burkis Way, a series of comedy sketches, is today's vintage comedy. That's on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, repeated at 12:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. In Scam Secrets, Shari Val looks at the latest techniques used by scammers. Radio 4 at 4 minutes past midday. And the musical Nanny is set in a stay-and-play toddlers group. That's at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. Radio 3 in concert this evening is from the Barbican, with the BBC Symphony Orchestra continuing the celebration of America's 250th year. And that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And then Friday, the 22nd of May. Vintage comedy today is an episode of Steptoe and Son from 1974. And you can listen to that on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 a.m, repeated at 12:30 and 6:30 p.m. The food programme heads to Belfast and to the Balmoral Show in Lisburn for the BBC Food and Farming Awards 2026 launch. And you can listen to that on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Heart and Soul, how Irish humanitarian Addie Roach's Christian faith inspired decades of work with children affected by the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. That's on BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m, repeated at 10:30 p.m. Friday night is music night, with music from period dramas, including Bridgerton, Downton Abbey and Pride and Prejudice. And that's on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. And that concludes my selection for this week. I do hope you have found it both helpful and entertaining.
TNS Soundings. Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. Celebrity News. Question 1. Which actress, known for There's Something About Mary and The Holiday, announced the birth of her third child? Question 2. Harrison Ford, who famously played Han Solo, celebrated Star Wars Day by launching his own signature whiskey. On what date is Star Wars Day celebrated? Question 3. Which member of the royal family is expecting their third child this summer? Sport. Question 4. Who is the current captain of the England Women's Rugby Union side? Question 5. Who is the number one ranked women's golfer in the world? Remember when? Question 6. Britain formally recognised Maoist China. The British government ended soap rationing. Uruguay won the World Cup for the second time. And Scottish students took the coronation stone from Westminster. But what was the year? Question 7. The Bolshoi Ballet celebrated its 200th birthday. America's two Viking spacecrafts landed on Mars. Britain and Iceland signed an agreement to end the Third Cod War. Chris Evert defeated Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley in the Wimbledon women's singles final. But what was the year? Question 8. Who am I? A multimedia artist and musician, I was born in Tokyo in 1933. I met John Lennon at one of my exhibitions in 1966 and we were married 3 years later. I have received multiple Lifetime Achievement Awards, including the 2009 Mojo Magazine Award for Excellence in Music, a Golden Lion for Lifetime Achievement for my pioneering role as an avant-garde artist, and the 2024 Edward McDowell Medal for my seven-decade career in contemporary art, music, film and performance. But who am I? Local knowledge. Question 9. Black Patch Park in Smethwick has been home to a Romany Gypsy community for over a century. After his death, a secret letter was found claiming he was actually born there in a caravan. Which world-famous silent black-and-white movie star is this referring to? And question 10. This May, pop star Kylie Minogue sent a surprise video message to 50,000 fans at War Memorial Park to celebrate the promotion of which local football club? How's your knowledge for this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for this week's quiz. Celebrity news. Question 1. Which actress, known for There's Something About Mary and The Holiday, announced the birth of her third child? Cameron Diaz. Question 2. Harrison Ford, who famously played Han Solo, celebrated Star Wars Day by launching his own signature whiskey. On what date is Star Wars Day celebrated? May the 4th be with you. Question 3. Which member of the royal family is expecting their third child this summer? Princess Eugene. Sport. Question 4. Who is the current captain of the England Women's Rugby Union side? Meg Jones. Question 5. Who is the number one ranked women's golfer in the world? Nelly Korda. Remember when? Question 6. Britain formally recognised Maoist China. The British government ended soap rationing. Uruguay won the World Cup for the second time. And Scottish students took the coronation stone from Westminster. But what was the year? 1950. Question 7. The Bolshoi Ballet celebrated its 200th birthday. America's two Viking spacecrafts landed on Mars. Britain and Iceland signed an agreement to end the Third Cod War. Chris Evert defeated Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley in the Wimbledon women's singles final. But what was the year? 1976. Question 8. Who am I? A multimedia artist and musician, I was born in Tokyo in 1933. I met John Lennon at one of my exhibitions in 1966 and we were married 3 years later. I have received multiple Lifetime Achievement Awards, including the 2009 Mojo Magazine Award for Excellence in Music, a Golden Lion for Lifetime Achievement for my pioneering role as an avant-garde artist, and the 2024 Edward McDowell Medal for my 7-decade career in contemporary art, music, film and performance. But who am I? Yoko Ono. Local knowledge. Question 9. Black Patch Park in Smethwick has been home to a Romani Gypsy community for over a century. After his death, a secret letter was found claiming he was actually born there in a caravan. Which world-famous silent black-and-white movie star is this referring to? Charlie Chaplin. And question 10. This May, pop star Kylie Minogue sent a surprise video message to 50,000 fans at War Memorial Park to celebrate the promotion of which local football club? Coventry City. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Before we turn the page to the final day's readings from the papers, this first article, the young player of the under-18 side is actually called 7-7, and that's hyphenated, and that is his name.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday the 12th of May. 7-7 at the double for Baggies under-18s. Exciting Albion prospect Justin 7-7 marked his birthday weekend with 2 goals in a 4-0 win against Crystal Palace. 7-7 turned 17 on Sunday, 24 hours after the towering striker's latest goal haul for Albion's under-18s. The victory at the club's training base in Warsaw in the penultimate Premier League South clash of the campaign has the junior Baggies fourth in the standings. Their lofty position in the league of 15 clubs further underlines the exciting prospects in Shay Thompson's under-18 ranks. Albion's under-18 season comes to an end on the road at second place Tottenham. Tomorrow, neighbours Villa, who have recruited a host of Albion youngsters in recent years, are just out of reach in third. Runaway champions have a 16-point lead at the summit. Smethwick-born 7-7 got Albion up and running against the Eagles with his 7th and 8th goals of the campaign. He converted a James Bythel through ball for his side's opener. 7-7, a towering forward, had a goal-bound shot blocked but doubled his tally after racing onto a George Shaw challenge to keep his cool and finish. Forward Harry French, Albion's 13-goal top scorer, made it 3 just before half-time after good work from Ryland Colesby, who has impressed this season and signed a professional contract. Midfielder Bythel added a fine late fourth with a composed finish after a burst into the penalty area past a defender. Albion have chalked up 14 wins from 27 league games under Thompson in the coach's debut campaign at the helm. Exciting fullback Alfie Morn was named as the club's academy player of the 2025-26 season. Devon-born striker French, 17, was recently one of 4 youngsters to sign first professional deals. Also agreeing terms were goalkeeper Maxwell Moses, Dudley-born Cyprus youth international Antonio Perkins and ex-Wolves defender Shaw. Striker 7-7 shot to prominence at the beginning of the season when he netted a 7-minute opener in a 5-0 rout with Ipswich. Having grown up in the stone's throw from the Hawthorns, 7-7 signed with the Baggies youth, set up aged 9. Capital game for passengers as new direct line to London set to launch this weekend. A new direct rail line will be launched between Warsaw and London this weekend. London Northwestern Railway has announced that the service to Euston will start on Sunday. There will be 1 direct service in each direction Monday to Friday. The 0613 Birmingham New Street to London Euston service will start from Warsaw at 05:46 a.m. The 1826 from London Euston to Birmingham New Street will arrive at Warsaw at 21:16. From Sunday, the rail firm will be able to introducing more early morning services between Birmingham New Street and Liverpool Lime Street. The changes are enabled by the full introduction of the Class 730 fleet, allowing longer trains to operate and helping to reduce the crowding on peak services. Innocent men held in murder probe due to van swap, jury told. This article is by Rob Smith. Two innocent men were arrested by police investigating the murder of a woman because their colleague had been using a different van from the usual on the weekend of the killing, a court heard. The two men both worked with FedEx delivery driver Tanveer Singh, 31, who is on trial for the murder of Shara Miller. The body of Ms. Miller, a sex worker, was found in Woodburn Road, Smethwick, shortly after 6 a.m. on August 11th last year, by a member of the public arriving at a nearby industrial unit for work. Singh had been on a night out with others the night before, dropped a friend off, then picked up Ms. Miller in Babington Road, near the Handsworth Smethwick border, before driving to the industrial estate in Woodburn Road, where they arrived at about 1 a.m. He was driving a Mercedes Sprinter van that was usually driven by one of his colleagues, but Singh had been using it that weekend, having agreed to take it for repairs at a motor dealer near his home in West Bromwich. The trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court heard yesterday, prosecutor Rachel Brand KC told the jury it was accepted that Singh normally drove a different van, but he and his colleague had swapped vehicles for the weekend of August the 9th and 10th. In the event, repairs couldn't be done because parts were needed. But Singh kept the van over the weekend and returned it to his colleague on the afternoon of August 11. Hours after the prosecution alleged he murdered Ms. Miller. Then, on August the 12th, when it was being driven by its usual driver, West Midlands police stopped the van and arrested him. Another colleague with whom the van was registered was also arrested before both men were released after the situations were explained. Singh was arrested soon after and charged with Ms. Miller's murder. The jury was shown CCTV footage from businesses near where Ms. Miller's body was found, as well as from an area near Singh's home in Leopard Lane. Ms. Brands said the footage from the van arrived in Woodburn Road clearly showed Singh get out of the cab and walk round to the passenger side. The sliding door could also be heard on the footage. It was obvious that the two of them got into the large rear compartment of the Mercedes Sprinter van, she previously said. Within less than 2 minutes of them getting in the back of the van, on the audio track of the footage, loud shouting can be heard. The prosecution alleges that by 1:32 a.m. Singh had strangled and killed Ms. Miller, then removed her body from the van and left it on the pavement, where it was discovered hours later. A post-mortem examination found that Ms. Miller, had originally from Lincolnshire, had been strangled and her injuries included a number of neck fractures and bruises consistent with blunt force trauma or impact with a hard surface. West Midlands Police CCTV coordinator DC Aaron Johnson gave evidence for the prosecution confirming Ms. Miller's body had not been interfered with between the time she was left in Woodburn Road and the discovery by a worker. Ms. Brand asked the officer, the CCTV in Woodburn Road, were they all viewed all the way through from 1:31 a.m. until a little after 6 a.m. when the police arrived? Yes, absolutely, Mr. Johnson replied. Did anyone touch the body of Shara Miller? No people, vehicles or animals interacted with her body while it was left there. Her body was left undisturbed from where the defendant had left it. Yes. The jury also heard Singh arrive back at his home in Leopard Lane later that night and was seen on CCTV the following morning in work clothes before opening doors on the van and getting inside. DC Johnson was cross-examined by Gurdip Garcher KC, who asked him to confirm that banging sounds heard on the footage from Leopard's Lane, where Singh was in the van alone, were similar to that heard of the footage from Woodburn Road. He agreed it was. The trial continues. TV's Alice creates a Garden of Evolution to headline live show. This article is by Harriet Kent. Academic, author and broadcaster Professor Alice Roberts and acclaimed international garden designer Professor David Stevens are creating the headline show garden at this year's BBC Gardeners World Live. Held at the Birmingham NEC from June the 18th till the 21st, the Garden of Evolution will trace the evolution of plants and life forms from their first appearance on our planet to the present day. Conceived by Professor Alice Roberts and supported by the University of Birmingham Academies, the garden will enable visitors to walk through a living landscape of primitive plants, creatures and the beginning of human life. Alice said, "I'm absolutely delighted to be creating a headline garden for BBC Gardeners World Live this year. I wanted to tell the story of the evolution in plants and animals in a landscape where visitors will walk through a path through 500 million years of evolutionary history. I have teamed up with garden designer extraordinaire David Stevens and colleagues from the University of Birmingham to bring evolutionary biology and paleontology to life. I will be at the show every day hosting live conversations with visitors and signing copies of my new book, Humans, The Evolution of a Species. Visitors will be taken on a journey starting from the Cambrian period, some 500 million years ago, passing dramatic rocks, swamps and cascading water, to the Carboniferous and Permian periods of primitive plants. They will then pass through the Triassic and Jurassic period and encounter a model Cretaceous dinosaurs. The Lapworth Museum of Geology is bringing the ancient world to life in the garden through research-inspired model making. A life-size model, Acaceratops, a small unusual dinosaur related to Triceratops, will be on display in the Cretaceous section of the Garden of Evolution, as well as a giant 300 million year old millipede in the Carboniferous section. The garden will end with a celebration of the university's climate change research, featuring a model of one of the world's largest climate change experiments. The garden's development has been supported by Birmingham academics Robert McKenzie, Professor of Atmospheric Science and Director of BIFOR, and Jeremy Pritchard, Professor of Life Sciences Education and Director of Education at BIFOR. Lucy Ashworth, Event Director at Organisers Immediate Live, said, "Professors Alice Roberts and David Stevens' extraordinary evolution landscape is sure to get people talking while highlighting the vital work of BIFOR monitoring the effects of climate change." During the show, Professor Alice Roberts will host daily conversations from within the garden, alongside horticultural specialists from Hillier, the garden's plant supplier, will provide information to visitors about the species featured in the garden. Book tickets via the BBC Gardeners World website.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Scientific advances offer hope for patients with sight loss. In summary, doctors have discovered new ways to treat low eye pressure and dry macular degeneration. Trials of both treatments have delivered sight improvements for patients and brought hope that more people could benefit as the new discoveries are rolled out more widely. This article is written by Heather and read by Vivian. Two recent trials have discovered new ways of treating eye conditions, and both offer potential for wider application to help more people suffering from sight loss. In one breakthrough, doctors at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London discovered that a low-cost gel could restore vision for patients with hypotony, an unusual but dangerous condition caused by low pressure in the eyeball. Meanwhile, in California, the inventors of a tiny microchip were looking for volunteers with advanced age-related dry macular degeneration to sign up for trials to help them read again. Some 32 patients joined the trial, including 5 in the UK, to have a microchip implanted behind one retina with a wireless link to video glasses. First, let's find out more about the gel treatment. Moorfields Hospital in London is home to a dedicated clinic for people with hypotony. This is a condition where the pressure in the eyeball becomes too low and the eye can start to collapse. The low pressure is caused by a lack of the natural jelly-like fluid inside the eye. This deficit can be caused by a range of factors. For example, an infection, a reaction to medication, or an after effect of eye surgery. It's a serious problem as it can lead to blindness. Until this trial, the standard treatment for hypotony used steroids and silicone oil to plump up the eye. However, there were problems. For example, the silicone oil could be difficult to see through. The treatment didn't restore much vision, and the substances used could be toxic if used long term. Looking for an alternative, the Moorfields doctors decided to try an alternative treatment using a low-cost, transparent, water-based gel. The gel, known as HPMC or hydroxypropyl methylcellulose, was already used in some types of eye surgery. But rather than using it as a one-off, the Moorfields team decided to inject it into the main part of the eye as a new regular treatment. Gel was injected every 3 to 4 weeks for a total of 10 months, with remarkable results, increasing the size and pressure of the eyes and restoring sight. 7 of the 8 patients who received the treatment experienced improvements in vision and eye pressure after a 12-month course of the treatment. Moorfields consultant Harry Petrushkin, who led the work, said, "We are excited that this simple treatment has proved so effective for patients with this rare condition. This is the start of a process of understanding more about the balance of fluid inside the eye, leading to improved care for our patients. There are now hopes that the treatment can be made more widely available, although there is still more work to do to work out which patients can benefit. And now let's turn to the high-tech implants being tested on patients with dry age-related macular degeneration. People with age-related macular degeneration typically suffer from blurred or distorted central vision, making it difficult to read or to see details. However, they often retain some photoreceptor cells and retinal neurons in their optic nerve that can pass visual information to the brain, allowing some peripheral vision. Aiming to help improve sight for people living with this problem, scientist Daniel Palanca from Stanford University in California collaborated with colleagues to develop a microchip called Prima. Prima is a tiny 2mm square solar-powered wireless microchip that is only the thickness of a human hair. The chip is implanted in the back of the patient's eye, and once in place, it can receive images via an infrared transfer and send those images along the optic nerve to the patient's brain. It's a complicated multi-stage process, as the images need to be captured and processed before they can be sent to the brain. In simple terms, it works like this. The images are first of all captured by a small camera mounted on a pair of glasses. All images are captured in black and white. The camera sends an infrared beam of the images to the implanted Prima chip. The Prima chip sends the images back to the small pocket-sized processor, which enhances the images to make them clearer. And finally, the enhanced images are sent back to the brain via the Prima chip and the optic nerve, allowing the patient to see the images. The results of the trial so far are impressive. After a year, 27 of the 32 patients given the implant were able to read again using their central vision. The glasses allowed them to magnify what they were seeing by up to 12 times and to adjust the brightness and contrast. At the moment, Prima only uses black and white images, but the developers hope a colour version may be possible in future. While restoring the ability to read is life-changing for the patients involved in the trial, it is fair to say that getting used to Prima came with some challenges. About two-thirds of the volunteers experienced short-term side effects following implants, including high pressure in the eye, although this didn't prevent vision improvements. The other challenge was learning how to use the combination of Prima, glasses and pocket processor, which took several months. In the UK, Sheila, aged 70, was one of the patients who signed up for PRIMA trials at Moorfields Eye Hospital. She said that learning to read using the system needed huge concentration, but she's delighted with the results. She only uses the system indoors because she needs to hold her head very still and apply great concentration to be able to read. Sometimes she needs to put a pillow under her chin to steady her head so that she can focus on the letters of the word she's trying to read. Mahi Mukwit is a consultant surgeon at Moorfields who led the UK arm of the trial. He said the PRIMA system was the first implant to give patients meaningful vision that they can use in their daily life, such as reading and writing. PRIMA is not yet licensed, so it's not available outside clinical trials. But let's hope that the results of the trials mean it could be made more widely available in the future.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Jan with some ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine based in Milton Keynes. They are aesthetically pleasing, aid mental health, reduce stress and boost our mood. Houseplants are little helpers, but so many of us are guilty of failing them. You pop into the local furniture superstore or hardware shop to purchase a new lock, a tub of paint or a bedside cabinet, and then your eyes make the acquaintance of the plant section. Before you know it, you are getting back in the car with impractical purchases, and those luscious green leaves will soon be all shades of brown, and then Percy Plant is put out with the trash. But it doesn't have to be that way. One of the most common reasons for plants expiring is overwatering. Too much water will turn the leaves brown and limp. Too little water will also turn the leaves limp, but they will be crispy to the touch. So many of our indoor plants are native to the tropics and will naturally require a warm environment in order to flourish. But that's not to say that you should pop them in front of a roaring fire or close to a radiator. You don't need to be a plant specialist to pick up on signs that they need a little love and attention. Aside from the leaves looking sorry for themselves, checking the soil for excessive moisture will alert you to overwatering or too little, and plant pots tend to be lighter if they are water deprived. An easy way to keep things on track is to purchase a moisture meter. Many plants love a light, draft-free position, but not all do. The simplest way to get the basics right is to pay attention to the instructions that come with any purchase and heed them. After my grandmother passed away, I found myself the custodian of an Aspidistra plant. These hardy, slow-growing plants are most at home in cool, dark spaces. They are known as the cast iron plant for a reason. Its arching, deep green leaves are simple but beautiful, and the plants can live in excess of 50 years. Except that the one in my charge is significantly older. My grandmother remembered the very same plant cheerfully sitting in her mother-in-law's home when she was a young lady. No one else was bothered to take in the old plant with its five wilting leaves, and I felt obligated. I've never been able to give up on any plant that has a hint of life about it. This Aspidistra was fighting hard, and it was rooted in the family. I spoke with an expert from the local garden centre who imparted great advice on how and when to replant, and 5 years on, it is still part of our family. It rewards us with a new leaf or two every spring, we're in double figures now, and I am proud to be a fourth generation custodian of this unconventional family heirloom. We've also rescued and revived an array of cacti that hadn't been shown water for months on end. They're all recovered, and one is showing its appreciation by flowering. If something is wrong with your houseplants, they will show you. Act quickly and you'll be able to turn your peaky plants into perky houseguests once more. So, how does your garden grow? Haven't got enough room to grow vegetables? Try square foot gardening. The square foot garden is a way of growing as many vegetables as you can in as small a place as possible. The area needed is 120 centimetres by 120 centimetres, basically 4 foot by 4 foot. Measure out the plot and edge it with wooden boards. Or you can try the square foot method with an existing raised bed. Dig out and remove any weeds and stones from the area. Create a raised bed that is 6 to 12 inches deep, and ideally 4 by 4 foot, with strings or canes splitting the space into 16 equal squares. Add some peat-free compost to fill up the bed. Avoid walking on the soil. It's important to keep it light. Planting. Each square will accommodate 1, 4, 9 or 16 plants, depending on the size of the plant. Ensure the taller crops are placed at the back. A south-facing plot is best. As for examples of what seeds or plants you could plant in each squares, one small bush tomato, such as Red Alert, one potato, such as Swift, two rows of peas, four climbing or dwarf beans, four lettuce, four baby sweet corn mini pop, 16 carrots, 16 beetroot and spring onions. If too many seeds germinate, simply snip off those not required with scissors so you don't disturb the root system of the remaining seedlings. As you can see, you will just grow a small amount in each square, but this could also be a nice project to do with children. And this month's top tip is summer hanging baskets give any space a splash of colour and really cheer the mood. Now is the time to plant them up. And if you put the hard work in at the start, you'll have more reward later. So using a good quality compost and a slow-release fertiliser is advisable. Begonia, busy lizzies, fuchsia, geranium and petunia are all popular choices. But perhaps you might choose to grow herbs and veg in a hanging basket instead. Chilli peppers, strawberries and peas are among the top choices.
DNF Soundings.
Our Sangwell Talking News volunteer Sue is a member of the U3A, also known as the University of the Third Age. Sangwell U3A News. Sangwell U3A members enjoyed a recent coach trip to the English Ironworks Centre, Oswestry Street, for a buffet lunch and a chance to explore the site, which focuses on artworks made from scrap and waste metal. Creations on display range from giant cartoon characters to life-size rearing horses, a flock of sheep with fleeces made from screws, and a huge gorilla made of spoons. The April monthly meeting, Emma Barron-Scott gave a very interesting talk on the 200-year history of sweets, dating from the time sugar became readily available here, and this month Andrew French entertained us with his well-researched history of the Beatles. The June talk will be on the role of the magistrate. Meetings take place on the second Monday each month at Gayton Road Community Centre, West Bromwich, 1:30 for 2 p.m. And visitors and new members are welcome.
And thanks for Trevor for reading that from Sue, who of course picks the articles every week. And Peter Beasley, who passed away 2 or 3 years ago, used to go along to the U3A meetings, and you're very welcome to join them if you can make your way to Gayton Road, which is quite near All Saints Way. It just remains for me to thank all our readers, if I can remember them all, which this week were Mia, Jan, Gavin, Linda, Pam standing in for Janet, and Trevor reading the final day's news, as well as that news from U3A that you just heard. Just to say, I very much enjoyed the SVI socialised visit to the Fixed Wheel Brewery in Blackheath. It's a microbrewery, of course, meaning a very small brewery, and we had a very nice conducted tour around the premises, which are quite small, and there's a bar, and some of us spent most of the afternoon there, and I'll be reporting a bit more on that later on. So very nice trip. That's it for this week. I hope the weather is a bit better next week. In fact, I heard Shefali on the news saying the other night that it should be warmer towards the end of next week. And certainly it was very gusty yesterday. Also, by the way, on the BBC News, there were some interviews from West Bromwich people about their thoughts on the national situation and what's happened in the elections. So maybe some people can catch up with that, although I don't think the news stays up there for long on the iPlayer. That's it for this week then. Do get the pen drives back to us as soon as you can. But we'll be back with you next week, of course. In the meantime, take care and bye-bye from me, Ray, and all the team.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.